Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants will be on listen-only until the question-and-answer session of today's conference, at which time you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I'd now like to turn the meeting over to your host, Mr. Peter Cassell. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for attending today's media availability. My name is Pete Cassell. I'm with FDA's Office of Media Affairs. We're hosting today's availability due to the high interest in this E. coli outbreak linked to romaine lettuce from the Yuma growing region. We wanted to be able to provide context and answers you may have with about updates we've posted or should be posting shortly to our website. We have speakers today from both FDA and CDC, and they're available to answer your questions later on in this briefing. I just want to go over a few things before we get started. So the two speakers who will make opening remarks are Dr. Stick Harris, who's the director of the FDA Coordinated Outbreak Response and Evaluation Network, and Dr. Matthew Wise from CDC's Outbreak Response Teams. After the speakers make their brief remarks, we'll move to question and answers, and reporters will be in a listen-only mode until we open up the call for questions. When asking a question, please state your name and affiliation, and also please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up so that we may get as many questions as possible. CDC and FDA have updated our response pages, or will be updating our response pages shortly, to reflect additional case counts and new developments in the traceback investigation. So with that, I will now turn the call over to FDA's Dr. Harris, who's here in the room with me.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for joining us today. The FDA is continuing to investigate illnesses related to chopped romaine lettuce from the Yuma growing region. We are working to identify multiple distribution channels that can explain the entirety of the nationwide outbreak and are tracing back from multiple clusters of ill people across the country. We have identified one farm as the source of the whole head romaine lettuce that sickened people at a correctional facility in Alaska. However, we have not determined where in the supply chain the contamination occurred. We are continuing to examine all possibilities, including that contamination may have occurred at any point along the growing, harvesting, packaging, and distribution chain before reaching the Alaska Correctional Facility. All of the lettuce in question from this farm was harvested between March 5th and 16th and is past its 21-day shelf life, which is why a recall is not possible. Because the growing season in the Yuma region is at its end, this farm is not currently growing any less. We'd like to emphasize that most of the illnesses in this national outbreak are not linked to the romaine lettuce from this particular farm. We're investigating dozens of other fields as potential sources of the chopped romaine lettuce, and will continue to share information as it becomes available. Currently, we have no evidence that other types of lettuce or romaine lettuce grown outside of the Yuma growing region are involved in this outbreak. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll turn it over now to Dr. Matthew Wise from CDC for some brief remarks.
All right, good afternoon. I'm Dr. Matt Wise. I'm the Deputy Branch Chief for Outbreak Response in CDC's Division of Foodborne, Waterborne, and Environmental Diseases. I'm joined by Dr. Rob Tokes, our Division Director. And I'd just like to provide a couple of updates on the illnesses that we're seeing in this outbreak. So one thing I really want to emphasize before we get into the details of the update is that nothing that I'm reporting today is actually changing the advice to consumers or retailers. So people should still not eat any type of romaine lettuce unless they know for sure it does not come from the Yuma growing region. And restaurants and retailers should not serve any romaine lettuce sourced from the Yuma growing region. As of today, April 27th, we are now up to 98 ill people in this outbreak from 22 different states. That's 14 more illnesses since our last update. The new states added today were Mississippi, Tennessee, and Wisconsin. Of 87 people with information available, 46 or 53% have been hospitalized. This is higher than the hospitalization rate that we normally see with E. coli outbreaks, which is about 30%. We also know that 10 of the ill people in this outbreak have developed kidney failure, a type of kidney failure called hemolytic uremic syndrome. Laboratory testing at CDC has confirmed that the strain of shigatoxin-producing E. coli 0157H7 in this outbreak is one that tends to cause more severe illness based on the toxin profile that it produces. So for a little bit more background on that, Shiga toxin-producing E. coli can produce two types of Shiga toxins called STX1 and STX2. And when we see a strain that only produces STX2, it tends to cause more severe illness. And so the strain in this outbreak is what we would call an STX2 only producing E. coli. So this information does not change our advice for consumers in any way, but it is one reason why we may be seeing a somewhat higher hospitalization rate than we see in other Shiga toxin producing E. coli outbreaks. The last reported illness began on April 20th, 2018. And we do expect more reports of illnesses since there's a 2 to 3 week delay between the time that a person gets sick and the time that they can be confirmed as a part of an outbreak. This E. coli outbreak is now actually the largest multi-state Shiga toxin-producing E. coli outbreak since a 2006 outbreak that was linked to spinach. That made over 200 people sick. And that outbreak was also caused by a similar strain of Shiga toxin-producing E. coli that had this single STX2 toxin produced. So we also saw severe illnesses in that outbreak. So again, while this outbreak investigation is ongoing, the most important thing for people to do is to avoid eating any romaine lettuce, whether it's whole heads or hearts of romaine, chopped or in a salad mix, unless they can confirm that it was not grown in the Yuma, Arizona growing region. We certainly recognize that this can be very challenging for a consumer to identify whether their lettuce was from a particular growing region. So if in doubt, don't buy it or don't eat it. So again, thank you for your time today, and I, along with Dr. Harris and Dr. Tokes, would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wise. At this time, we will begin the question and answer portion of the briefing. Operator, we'll go ahead and take the first question.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You'll be prompted to record your name. Please be sure to unmute your phone. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And one moment for your first question. First question comes from Mike Stobe. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. My two questions. One is, could you all say a little more about, do you think that the outbreak is over? I know you said there's delays in reporting. You also said the growing season's over. Do you think it's likely that the people who've gotten sick have already gotten sick and now we're just going to have a lag of a few weeks? Or do you expect more people to start coming down with symptoms in the days ahead? That's the first question. I'll pause for your answer.
Can we get your affiliation?
I'm sorry, I'm with the Associated Press.
Okay, and just as a reminder to everyone on the line, you know, when you're taking off mute for a question, if you could give your name and your affiliation, that would be great.
So as to your first question, I mean, I think it's difficult for us to say definitively that there's not any continued risk. So certainly, you know, we've heard that a lot of the harvesting has been completed in this region, and FDA certainly could weigh in on that. But I think at this point, from a CDC perspective, we both have a reporting delay, so we'll hear reports of more illnesses. But I think, you know, at this point, we can't be certain that there aren't any ongoing exposures, which I think is why we have the advice that we have.
Okay. Thank you. And the second question, you mentioned the 2006 spinach outbreak. I'm curious about the origin of the Shiga toxin 2 in that one. Where was that traced to, and what are your leading suspicions or theories about? This is an unusual E. coli, isn't it? Where does it come from, cows, or where? What are you looking at as the possible origin of this? Also, I'm sorry, I'd like to know more about the farm that was identified. What city was it in that was linked to the whole head lettuce? Thank you.
Hi, this is Rob Tokes at CDC. Thanks for your question, Mike Stobe. The STX2 only profile is not particularly unusual, but there are several different profiles, and we know that this one is associated with higher hospitalization rates and more frequent HUS. So it is the most virulent of the various profiles. The reservoir typically for the Shiga toxin producing E. coli 0157 are animals with ruminant animals, and and some other animals, but particularly the ruminants. But it can be spread through the environment, through water, through other wild animals, and through people. And so it's not particularly clear what the immediate source is just by knowing what the toxin type is. The outbreak in 2006 from a particular strain of STX2 producing E. coli 0157 was traced to spinach grown in the Salinas Valley. There was one particular farm ultimately identified where the same strain was found on the farm. It was found in a nearby stream, and the stream was about a half mile down from a cattle farm, a pasture, and the cattle wandered into the stream at liberty. And so there, and the strain was found on the pasture land as well. And there were also wild pigs running back and forth, and there's a question about whether they played a role in transporting it from the stream to the field. So it was one particular area. This is not the exact same strain, and just knowing it's STX2 doesn't tell us very much about where it came from.
Thank you.
And then in terms of the farm, Harrison Farm is in Yuma. They have fields in Yuma, Yuma, Arizona, and they are the grower of the product in this case.
Okay, we'll take the next question.
Next question comes from Lena Sun with The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, I think I didn't hear that last part of that sentence. What is the name of the farm? And can you say whether any of their other produce, do they just grow romaine? Do they grow other produce? Is there any issue with everything else they've grown? Have you identified where the bacteria came from on that farm? And then I'm sorry, I think my connection was not good. I thought I heard you say earlier that you were looking into dozens of farms for the other clusters. Could you please just clarify that?
Yes, ma'am, certainly can. The name of the farm is Harrison Farm in Yuma, Arizona. We have not yet gone to the farm to visit. We just had a firm call over the course of the last couple days, and we'll be making an assignment to reach to go out to the farm and visit with them, find out, you know, what else they are growing. But certainly at this point, we're not seeing any other implicated products. And to reiterate, you know, these are only the whole head romaine portion of, you know, the ongoing outbreak. And this was the only, this particular correction facility in Alaska was the only place we actually saw the disease linked to whole head romaine. And I'm sorry, I think there was another part to your question.
Yes. How many other farms or sources are you looking into?
Yeah, over two dozen. You know, one of the things about this particular outbreak is there are so many legs to chase. We have several subclusters that we're trying to look at and identify the distribution of product to those locations where the people got sick, and you know, trying to link those all together. And you know, there's a lot of disparities between them, so that has made it difficult. And to date, we've narrowed that down to a couple dozen farms out of thousands of fields
in Yuma. In the Yuma, right?
Right.
And these farms, have they stopped growing lettuce? Because I thought the last shipment of lettuce from the Yuma region was like April 15th.
Are you speaking about Harrison Farm in particular or all of them in the area? Because Harrison Farm has ceased production of lettuce. They're growing grass on the fields now. Their harvest has ended. We haven't been able to guarantee that there's no product coming out of Yuma at this point. But given the time of year, the expectation is that harvesting has moved north from the Yuma growing region.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox with NBC.
Hi, thanks. I'm wondering, since you say you've traced the whole lettuce outbreak that occurred in Alaska to one farm, is this still all one outbreak, or are there multiple outbreaks involving products? Have you genotyped this one separately? Is it somehow different? And can you tell us a little bit about the production process, what you're looking at? Is it possible that the lettuce from Harrison Farms went through some kind of common distributor? Thanks.
So this is Matt Wise at CDC. Maybe I'll make one initial comment about the illnesses in Alaska. So all of the illnesses in this outbreak share the same rare DNA fingerprint based on pulsed field gel electrophoresis, or PFGE. We do not have any whole genome sequencing results yet back on the illnesses from Alaska, so that's certainly something that we will look into when we get that sequence data to see, you know, how they fall in with other illnesses in the outbreak.
So then how do you square the fact that you've got this whole lettuce from Yuma that is linked to Alaska only, and then these other cases elsewhere?
Well, again, I mean, I think that's going to be part of the analysis and the discussion that we're doing here, is to try and take the whole genome sequence data that we get for those human illnesses and line that up with the information that FDA is collecting to see whether perhaps those correlate in some manner. So it could be that we see those Alaska illnesses as maybe slightly different from the other ones, which maybe would make sense if they had a unique sort of source of lettuce. So, again, we don't know that to be certain now because we don't have that data. But again, I think we're going to be engaging in that dialogue and that discussion as we get more results in.
I am so sorry to be stupid. You said that all the illnesses in this outbreak share the same rare DNA fingerprint, but then you say you haven't done the whole sequencing. So are they partially similar?
Right. So because they all have that same DNA fingerprint that's rare, we have a very high index of suspicion that these are all linked to a common source. All the people in this outbreak are reporting romaine lettuce. As FDA has been able to do traceback, they've been telling us that it all looks like it's sourced from Yuma. So we have many lines of evidence, I think, suggesting to us right now that all of these illnesses are connected in some way through romaine grown in the Yuma growing region. I think as we get more detailed analysis done, I think what we'll try and see is if there's any additional differentiation that we might be able to see in the genetic data that would correlate with some of these different farm sources that FDA is using. So again, we sort of use a two-stage, two-step testing process. The first fingerprint is by PFGE, and then we go on to do more characterization by sequencing. So sequencing will just give us a little higher resolution view to see if we can align sort of the FDA traceback with the bacteria that are coming out of ill people. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I thought I heard you say at the very beginning that this the first case, the whole lettuce that was distributed to Alaska, was completely and utterly separate, but it's not. It's part of the outbreak. You just don't know how it's part of the outbreak.
Exactly. So the Alaska illnesses are a part of the outbreak investigation along with all the other states. I think what I'm just saying is we're trying to examine even more closely how those fit in with where lettuce may have come from other parts of the outbreak. So, again, it could be two adjacent fields that share the same water source or things like that. That's part of the discussion of trying to fit together the sequencing data with the traceback and epidemiologic data that we're getting.
Thank you.
And I don't know if FDA wants to add anything on that. I'm sorry I kind of meandered into your region there.
No, not a problem, sir. No, I think you're exactly right. I think there's a perception that, you know, when we do traceback, that each leg is just a direct line down, and in this case you're looking more at a web, and so trying to figure out where all those are coming from, and you know, ideally we'd love to get those mapped out and try and find convergence someplace to identify that specific cause. We're just not there yet, and it's entirely possible we may not get there. Oftentimes we don't, but we're continuing to work on it.
Thank you.
Okay, operator, we'll take the next question.
Our next question comes from Coral Beach with Food Safety News. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you all for taking time to do this teleconference today. I wanted to kind of follow up on the traceability discussion that was just going on with Amy's question, and then I also have a question about irrigation. So regarding traceability, it seems like that is a huge problem, as you've been talking about. What can the produce industry do? Is there a chance that government's going to come in and say you absolutely have to adopt some labeling practices that will help with traceability? What's the situation with that?
It's certainly a difficult situation because, you know, if when I walk into a grocery store and I look at a bag of lettuce and it says product of the USA, you know, do I know it's from Yuma? No. Do I know it's from California? No. And so, you know, I think to me, that's solved by more descriptive labeling, but, you know, it's in the end, it's industry's call at the moment as to how that's implemented.
As far as labeling, I wasn't necessarily talking about at the consumer level, but through the supply chain. I know that blockchain may have some wonderful solutions in the future, but right now, couldn't we get some sort of labeling at harvest level and then through the supply chain that would kind of provide the trace back you guys need to do this quicker?
No, absolutely. And you know, under FSMA, it's a one step forward, one step back rule. And so trying to find all those records, whether they be digital records or written records or handwritten records, is extremely tough.
All righty. Moving over to irrigation. Number one, are you say dozens of growers. Are there fields adjacent? And if so, do they have common irrigation water, or are they positioned where runoff could go from one grower's field to another? And the last part of that question is, would the irrigation water testing rules that were in the produce rule, would they have helped this situation had they been in place?
So in terms of adjacency, we simply just don't know yet. That's what we're trying to figure out. As I mentioned earlier, I want nothing more than to be able to map out all these locations and start comparing that way. In terms of the water, we just don't know at this point. You know, we can't. I don't know if it is the water at this point.
And again, the traceability probably would have sped up this part of the investigation, I'm assuming.
Well, certainly, you know, you mentioned blockchain, and I think that, you know, that certainly seems to be an amazing technology if it were implemented, you know, to be able to, I think it took 8 seconds, what took days in Walmart's experiment pilot. And so, you know, would I like to see that? Of course, but again, we'll see what ends up being implemented.
All right, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Brenda Goodman with WebMD. Your line is open.
Hi, this is the second time in just a few months that E. coli has been linked to romaine lettuce, and I just wondered if your DNA fingerprinting had been able to determine that they were definitely different strains, or if you, were you able to get any DNA fingerprinting on that first outbreak that was in late December that was linked to the Canadian cases?
Yeah, this is Matt Wise at CDC, so we were able to look at the sequence data from both the December outbreak and this outbreak, and they are genetically distinct. So they are different strains of E. coli. They're both 0157, but they're different strains.
Thanks. And then my second question was about the STX2 toxin. Can somebody provide a little insight about exactly how that acts in the body and why it seems to be so just hard on a person when they get infected?
Yeah, this is Rob Tokes here at CDC. The different Shiga toxins, and actually there's more than just these two. There are others. Act by binding to the cells that line blood vessels, and they bind with different tightness. And minor variations in the structure of the toxin means they bind more or less well. They're more or less potent as toxins. Even minor genetic variations can lead to difference in binding, difference in effect. The bottom line for what happens is the toxin binds to the cell that lines the blood vessels in certain organs, like the gut and the kidney and sometimes the brain. And the result after that binding is it destroys the lining of the blood vessel. And that's why some people get kidney failure. Lots of people get bloody diarrhea because it interrupts the blood supply to the tissues of the gut. Kidney failure when it interrupts the blood supply to the tissues of the kidney, and occasionally stroke or other neurologic complications when it attacks the blood vessels that are in the brain.
Thank you. That was fascinating.
Our next question comes from Amy Birbaum with CBS.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to clarify, you said that most of these are not linked to this particular field. Could you clarify, do you mean not yet linked, or you've definitely ruled out that that the other illnesses are not linked to this particular field?
Certainly. You know, the overall national outbreak is currently, as Dr. Wise said, 98 sick people. The few that were sick in the Alaska Correction Facility they have the same bug, but they were infected from whole head romaine, and that whole head romaine was from this particular farm. We have not yet determined the cause of the chopped romaine that is indicated in all the rest of the cases.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Janelle Alicia with Kaiser Health News. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a question about the victims in the case, and I'm wondering about their characteristics. I'm wondering, you know, HUS is usually typically worse for kids younger than 5 and older folks. I'm wondering if you can tell me the proportion of people who are either elderly or very young. I saw that the ages are 1 to 88 and the median age is 31, but wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the proportion of people and whether any particular groups of people need to be more concerned than others.
Hey, Janelle, it's Matt at CDC. So I can give you a little bit more information about the people that are ill with HUS in this outbreak investigation. So that group of 10 people that have been diagnosed with hemolytic uremic syndrome, their ages are from 13 to 87 years, and we do have 3 people that were diagnosed with HUS that are children. And we do see in general that HUS is a more common complication in children in these outbreaks. Again, I mean, this is a serious E. coli, and so I think, you know, everybody should be concerned and everybody should be avoiding romaine. I mean, this is not one of the times where I think we'd want to tailor our advice to risk groups. It's a bad E. coli, and anybody that consumes it can get really sick. So I think that's probably our main message that we'd want to get across.
Great. That's helpful. Just one other thing. You're saying that you can't guarantee that there's no product coming out of Yuma. Why not, after, you know, so much emphasis on this outbreak?
That's simply the information we're getting from industry organizations at this time.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, operator, next question.
Our next question comes from Blake Herzog of Yuma Sun. Your line is open.
Yes. Can you tell me specifically where this field is that's been identified for the whole head? Is it, do you have an address or a location?
I don't believe we do. At least I don't have it with me at this time. I'll have to get back to you with that information if we have it.
Okay. And besides the two dozen or more fields that are being looked at, are there any other processors or shippers, anyone else in the supply chain at this point?
At this point, we're looking at the whole spectrum, for each of our legs. So, yes, we're looking at a lot of across the board, from the growers on up all the way to the sub-clusters at the individual restaurants.
Okay, so the 24 plus are fields, but then there are other locations that are being investigated or looked at?
Well, as we go through the distribution of the product, we're looking for convergence between multiple, where the romaine lettuce got contaminated, and trying to identify places of convergence where that may have happened. And so, as we get those records, we're looking at each location or grower or shipper or distributor and trying to see if there's convergence with those organizations.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, operator, next question.
Next question comes from Jamie Ducharme with Time Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. A pretty straightforward question. I'm just wondering if you know approximately the percentage of lettuce that is grown in Yuma, if this is a major supplier of the U.S.'s romaine.
So romaine is grown seasonally in this region from November-ish to March-ish. And then it moves gradually north to the Salinas Valley in California for the summer growing season. And so, there's a transition time, which is generally the March-April, as well as the, October-November, as it moves between the locations.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, operator, next question.
The next question comes from David Neal with Miami Herald. Your line is open.
Hi, gentlemen. I was wondering if anybody could address why it seems that romaine lettuce repeatedly crops up in these E. coli outbreaks, not just obviously two of the last three, but several over the last 10, 20 years.
Certainly, sir. And one of the biggest things is it's so common. I eat bagged lettuce a couple times a week, and it includes romaine lettuce. It's also, it's not something that's cooked. And so there's no kill step. You're just eating the raw agricultural product that grew in Mother Earth. And so that adds to the possibility that you're going to pick up a bug. Obviously, that's not what we want, and we want to eliminate the potential exposure to this, but that's why it happens more often.
Okay, sir. I'm sorry. Who answered that question? I'm sorry.
This is Stick Harris from FDA.
Okay, thanks. That's what I thought.
Sure thing.
Okay, operator, next question.
The next question comes from Ariel Hart with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm seeing a cluster, or at least a number of cases, suddenly pop up in the South. We had the Georgia DPH announce our case yesterday, the day before, and then today we've got Tennessee and Mississippi. So is it right to say that it's spreading in the South? And how does it go, as opposed to something like the flu that goes person to person? I'm having a hard time visualizing how a bacterium from a farm seems to spread or pop up geographically.
So this is Matt at CDC. I mean, I'll take kind of a crack from the human illness side of things, and then FDA may have something to add. As we kind of alluded to in the beginning, because it takes some time for the DNA fingerprinting to occur, and for an illness to be sort of confirmed as part of an outbreak, a multi-state outbreak. We are, in some extent, a couple of weeks behind at any time to sort of define where we are in the outbreak. I think, as we said in the beginning, we do have some concern that there's still ongoing risk, but a lot of times when we're seeing illnesses added on at this point, these are reflective of food exposures that were happening a couple of weeks ago. I think in terms of how the outbreak itself unfolds and moves into different regions, again, and the outbreak is sort of an echo of how the contaminated food moved through the country. And so, food travels on trucks and things like that and has to go from place to place. And so the order in which people in the country might be exposed to a contaminated food item can vary. And we see that in many outbreaks. They may start in one part of the country and move to others as that food is sort of moved through commerce.
So that may be an FDA question because, I can't imagine food is going first up to the north and then coming south.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, that may be an industry or FDA type of question. I can't imagine, that romaine is being shipped from Yuma up to Idaho or Pennsylvania and then coming back down south.
So this is Matt at CDC. Can I clarify one thing, Stick, sorry, before you jump in, just because I think this might make it a little easier. So one thing it's important to say is, that reporting delay is not exactly the same for every single illness. So sometimes it might take one state 10 days to confirm an illness and another state 3 weeks. And so some of that variability is also a play. So I think it's both how the food is distributed, but there can be a bit of variability in how quickly did the person go to the doctor or how quickly was the hospital lab able to isolate the bacteria. So both of those things are happening in parallel. So just wanted to clarify that. And then Dr. Harris, sorry to cut you off there. I just wanted to interject that one piece.
No, and that sums up what needed to be said. So I had nothing additional.
Thank you.
Operator, we have time for one more question.
This question comes from Madeline Briggs with NBC News Radio. Your line is open.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you so much. I'm glad my last question is the one for you. I just want to know, you said tracing has been really difficult, and these E. coli are similar but could have different sources. I was just curious if you guys could confirm how many of the illnesses that have been reported have been directly linked to the Arizona field.
Are you speaking just in terms of the Harrison Farm field?
Yes, sir.
All of the cases from the correctional facility in Alaska.
Okay.
And then all the CDC.
That's eight illnesses in Alaska.
Eight illnesses. And so it's important to point out that that's, we've only been able to identify one specific farm that is responsible for these eight cases. But we still have a lot of work to do to identify other legs of this outbreak.
Okay. But you wouldn't say that this outbreak was sourced from this one farm. So all these illnesses across many different states, you guys are still investigating where all those came from, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then just for further confirmation, only so far these eight from Alaska have been directly connected to the Harrison farm.
Exactly. You've got it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your questions. I want to turn it over to Dr. Harris to give some brief closing remarks, and then we'll and see if CDC has anything they want to emphasize, and then we can wrap up the call.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to reiterate, at this point, we're still working to elucidate the remainder of the outbreak, but as Dr. Wise mentioned, the eight cases out of Alaska are linked to this specific chain down to the single farm we've mentioned today, Harrison Farm. But that is the whole head romaine lettuce that has been identified for this outbreak. The remainder, it has all been chopped, bagged romaine, and we're continuing to work to figure out those other legs and identify the fields where that was grown and ensure that Americans are safe and not eating that anymore.
Okay.
And this is Matt Wise at CDC, and I think just to kind of conclude from our end, I think despite, the new information we have today, our advice to consumers remains, and I think the folks on the phone here are an important partner to make sure that actionable advice can get out to consumers so they can do something. So again, from our end, people should not be eating any type of romaine lettuce unless they know for certain that it does not come from the Yuma growing region. And again, restaurants and retailers should not, under any circumstances, be serving any romaine lettuce that was sourced from the Yuma growing region. So we just want to, you know, make sure that we can emphasize those points.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Wise. And thank you, everyone, for participating. I want to just make sure everyone knows that our website is updated, as well as CDC's, so we can confirm that. You can go to our outbreak posting for more information. A replay of this conference media availability will be available in about an hour and will be up for approximately 3 days. So if you have any follow-up questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me at FDA. My phone number is 240-402-6537. It's also online on our website. Or you can reach out to CDC's media office at 404-639-3286. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Operator, that concludes the conference.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.